All right, welcome to another episode of NBA Betting Rose and Balls. I know we're doing the off-season previews, so I want to do that in tandem with when I realize the topic is cap absorption. Sounds like a boring thing, but it's quite exciting. What do I mean by that? You can have a lot of teams now that have looming extensions with the second apron now. Now the new CBA is really kicking into gear, and the second apron matters more. Teams, the luxury tax is way more impactful than it once was, so it's not like even teams like the Knicks, where in the past they may be like, hey, you know, listen, we like a guy like Quickly, we like a guy like Grimes, we're fine paying the tax. The tax is enormous this year for those teams that go over the second apron. So as a result, you did see how that was earlier impact at the trade deadline, right? We saw the Knicks, as an example, move Quick, move Grimes, because they knew, hey, we're not going to sign these guys to extensions. And the reason why we won't is, you know, look, they're bench guys for us, and it would take us on the luxury tax. We're not going to do that to the luxury tax. Let's trade them now. So now teams are already, like, thinking ahead and moving guys as a result of getting out of, you know, any kind of tax help. So what that's kind of created is this bloated mid-market. So now what teams are looking at is a couple of things. A, if you have extensions coming up, let us unload some of these, you know, bloated veteran talents. And I say veteran because the scale, as you may know, NBA salaries increases the more you play in the league. So there's going to be talents that are available that normally would not have been available in the past. They're available now because the contract's quite hefty. And a team's going to have to make the decision soon to pay another guy an extension. New Orleans is the greatest example of that, okay? Sacramento is another example of that, where you have a team that has a guy who's a pending free agent with an extension, kicker, and they obviously need to keep him, Malik Monk, and then you have to look at the vets. So this is important because I think now, it used to be, hey, if we have cap space, all right, who do we pay and all that, and I get that strategy. Teams need to get some win-now talent, but I think there's going to be a unique strategy this offseason to think about, hey, who could we absorb? And said differently, who could we absorb that also would get us an asset or get us what we want? And there's a couple scenarios I want to talk through, and teams that are looking at that, right? Now, look, this has been done in the past, but in the past, it wasn't necessarily, it's really, negative contracts is the theme here. So, in the past, a negative contract was someone who's grossly underplaying their contract. So the best example I have of a team that did this was, you know, Boston in the early 2000s with Seattle and Vin Baker, okay? The Celtics had a huge expiring deal that they could move. And I'm trying to remember who that guy was, and it's escaping me. But they had it's going to come to me. They had a massive expiring deal. I don't think it was Rafael Friends just yet. It might be, though. I don't think it was, because that was pre-Rafael Friends. But anyway, you have a massive expiring deal on the team. And you have these bloated bad contracts, and the player underperforms them. So the Seattle Supersonics, you know, did a trade where they moved to Sean Kemp years before. I think this was like 2000, you know, maybe 02, 03 range maybe. With Chris Wallace there. And they need to throw in a sweetener asset. In this case, it was Shamad Williams. Shamad Williams was coming off a really good playoff series, I believe, against Utah. And again, this is back when GMs are completely overrated, like a little playoff stint. And they would pay guys a lot based on what they did in, like, a 4 or 5-game series. This was the case with Seattle-Utah. Shamad Williams was a second-round pick with the Sonics, I believe. Completely outperformed. Did great in the series. And has some value, and the Sonics are like, look, we gotta. They wanted to obviously unload Vin Baker's contract. He was absurdly disappointing. They got him again post that Sean Kemp deal, and the contract had a couple more years left, right? So the Celtics came calling, and they said, okay, we'll give you an expiring deal. We'll absorb basically Baker and Shamad Williams. That was the typical way it was done. Okay, not much has changed honestly in the sense that you're still looking for those contracts are still bad. But you're looking for the. I don't think they're. You're still looking for like veterans who have quite good use on my team, and then you do need sweeteners. What else are you going to get for it, right? That's the idea. So we'll go to kind of go through. There's a lot of examples in NBA history. I just named you the Vin Baker one. There's obviously, you know, a lot more we could do that are fun. And again, like, this is always just a common concept where, like, you deal a bad deal, you attach a sweetener to unload the deal. Another good example is when Cleveland was making their title run, they knew they needed more wing depth. And they J.R. Smith was considered a bad contract. And the Knicks had to throw in Iman Shumpert for the Cavs to take on Smith in that deal. That wasn't a cap absorption deal, it was a straight-up trade. In cap absorption deals, the team taking the veterans need to get the sweetener. Here's what's different now. It's not even sweeteners anymore. These are just flat out free. These are, it's almost like looking at it like a free agency, but you're guaranteeing the guy at that number, right? So the way I would look at it, and again, I always use Detroit as an example. They have a ton of cap, and they are, you know, a team that is devout of talent. So Detroit and these teams like it are going to look at this offseason and say, okay, do we, you know, make a run at Tobias Harris, right? Let's say. They're going to want a veteran talent. Now, the problem is, when you do that, if you're Tobias Harris's agent, or, you know, any agent of a player, and you're looking at Detroit, you have other options. Detroit, because of where they're located, let's just be real, and their standings, you're going to have to, quote-unquote, overpay. Okay? So, if you're, and there's going to be a negotiation, you might lose out on that talent. So, as much as Detroit, let's say, wants a guy like Tobias Harris, if I'm Tobias Harris's agent, I know this is going to sound like a crazy number. I'm trying to get at, my goal is 4-140, which is a nutty number, okay? That's like 33, 35 a year, right? 35 a year, okay? But, like, look, I look at them, like, these guys have $60 million in cap. My guy wants to go there. I need years. I want years. If I'm Tobias Harris, I'm going to be 31. I want to play it on 35. This is my last big contract. It's the years. You're not going to get 4-160. This is absurd talk. But you're probably realistically, you have a shot at 4-140. Okay? And now if you're Detroit, you got to ask yourself, you know, about Tobias Harris in general and that type of talent. And you're not as worried, again, about the 30s. You're worried about the 4 years. So I think what this absorption allows teams to do is rethink free agency a little bit. Like, why get the veteran in Tobias Harris, who, you know, look, I get he fits. He's known to be adaptable player, not a bad defender, efficient guy, all that. And I know a team like Detroit's really interested in him. You know, this is like the Greek yogurt versus vanilla ice cream kind of concept. Like it's this or that. You know, this one tastes almost as good. It's got way less calories. It's got way less years. So I said, Tobias Harris, can I offer you a John Collins? Eitan, he's a lot worse. It's got 2 years left, dude, after this year. Okay? Right? And he's filling a similar role on your team. Does he fit just as well? The nuances are important, no doubt. So that's what teams are going to need, like a Detroit, and needs to rethink about. So what I want to talk about is, who are these cap absorption candidates? Okay? And what are teams going to look for in a deal for them? So I'm going to kind of go through this before, right? Now, the last cap absorption candidate is a current one as well. His name is John Collins. So as we talked about, like, Atlanta looked to dump him. They were late on him. And, you know, now he... Now Utah has the same scenario. Now Utah's scenario is a little weird in my opinion. I'll explain why. Unlike Atlanta, actually they're kind of similar, I guess, to an extent. Atlanta wanted to unload Collins because he was in the way. This is the weird thing in the NBA. He was in the way of talent they really wanted to develop. And they were right. Jalen Johnson, namely, and also Hunter. Right? Hunter and Collins didn't make a lot of sense, but Jalen Johnson was the guy. Hey, look, if he needs to play, he's got to get over them. Now the problem is, coaches and teams like aren't really going to bench guys if they're making a boatload of money. Okay? That's not something they do. So, you almost have to, it's weird, like, you're better off, in theory, just having, because you have to remove an asset to get rid of him. But you're better off, in theory, keeping the guy with the bad contract and just benching him because I don't have to move an asset to unload him. Right? You are better off doing that. In, you know, for whatever reason, but teams don't feel, and also they don't want to, like, you know, I don't know how you go upstairs and be like, hey, how come this guy's getting paid this much a game in that many minutes? Fine. Here's what's unique. So, it's funny. Collins is now in the same situation with Utah that he was in Atlanta. So, just like in Atlanta, they wanted to move him and play Jalen Johnson. In Utah, they're like, hey, we got Sensabaugh who's playing well, kind of a 3-4. And Taylor Hendricks, our former top 10 pick. We need to play these guys. Plus, we're going to have another rookie coming in. We got Markkanen. We got to unload Collins. So, look, Utah has been showcasing Collins throughout the year. And he's looked okay. Now, he's not the highest IQ guy, most efficient guy. He's going to get paid about $20 million a year. So it's not a crazy number for two more years. So, Ainge would love a cap absorption candidate. Just, hey, absorb him. Who's going to absorb him free? So, right off the bat, you know, most teams see it as a negative, and Utah's going to have to pay. The issue is, like, it's not enough to pay. So, I think Utah is going to look at a couple things. One is... At some point, you want to attach Jordan Clarkson to it and just be like, hey, who wants to get rid of both and get, like, a minor asset back? Now, it's a lot of money. Clarkson's going to be due 2025. He's got an extension kicker. So you're looking at $50 million for two guys. And the reason why I do that from Utah is, real simply, both. I'll make this argument. Both Clarkson and Collins are in the way of youth. Clarkson is just a classic sixth man, and he's in the way of, really, George Sexton, and Chris Dunn, to an extent, if you really care about that. Let's say George and Sexton, okay? And then Collins, we talked about who's in the way with. So that, to me, is a combo. Now, can you absorb both? I think if I'm Utah, I need to get some kind of middling asset. That, to me, is the most talented tandem on this list of absorption candidates. You might need an asset to even give them. But again, you're getting good talent. Good bang for your buck talent-wise. And the contracts, you know, look bad up front. You're talking about 2 years left. So now all of a sudden, hey, in year one, these guys, you know, bring value to your team. They make you competitive. And again, these veterans are very helpful. Also, particular during the slog of the NBA season. You have guys that get you a bucket. You got back-to-backs in Toronto, things like that. You need guys who could step up who could play a myriad of roles for you, including, like, hey, I need to be a scorer this night, which, again, Clarkson and Collins could do, so it's helpful. So that's one tandem that I think is interesting. I'm going to move around here. Sacramento is another one. And, again, to the point earlier, for Utah, look, they're going to have a marketing kicker. They don't really need to do it, so they're not as desperate to sort of unload cap per se, okay? They could. It'd be nice. I think it helps with the development. They want to take next year for Cooper Flagg. It's something they would consider. But, like, I don't think it's the end of the world. Now, what they... that's their situation there. They'll take a flyer, maybe, for both of them. I think that's what they want. They probably want a flyer, right? Like a Quentin Grimes-level flyer would be ideal. Let's move around to Sacramento. Sacramento one's, to me, is more interesting. Because the Kings do have a cap crunch, unlike Utah. Utah more has, like, a roster playing crunch. The Kings have a cap crunch. Sabonis, rightfully so, paid a lot. Fox paid a lot. And Malik Monk is a pending free agent. So now you have to ask yourself, if you're Sacramento, like, they're probably worried someone's going to match for Monk. And Monk was a big part of what they did. They're going to have Keegan Murray's looming extension in about a year. So, like, these things are going to add up for them in the coming... in the coming while. So what would you do if you're Sacramento? Now, they've already sort of told us a little bit. One is, like, look, Harrison Barnes is the kind of negative contract at this point. He's a negative. He's a 2025 figure. Again, two more years. I can make some positive about him. He's a flexible, adaptable guy. He looked good in the bubble. That was already a couple years back. Like, it's been a while. So, doesn't look great for Harrison Barnes. That's the guy you want to unload. You want to give more freedom to Keegan Murray. You want to sign Monk. probably want some other minor free agents. You got Keon Ellis now, who's gotten a bigger role with your team. So that's the guy. Fine. But if you're going to keep Monk, the logical guy you got attached to Barnes, unload Barnes, is probably Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter, again. And again, what the theme with these veterans are, they're flawed veterans. So they're guys that, like, aren't necessarily enhancing the talent per se, and you have other pieces that do the job just as well, right? So, you know, for me, it Barnes and Huerter is an interesting tandem. It's, again, similar range salary-wise, looking at a combined 50-ish mil, but it's two starters who space for you. To me, that's another one to look at. Huerter's also been a bit hurt, and again, if they like Ellis more, like Duarte more, a little bit of the rotation, it's not that they don't like Huerter, but like Huerter at that figure is the concern. So I think Huerter and Barnes is another sort of, I call, cap absorption candidate. Okay, will a team that's under just be willing to take them both on and be like, hey, we'll do you a favor, Sacramento, boom, grabs them both. Okay. Now, there were rumors heading into the deadline that, and this now makes sense, that the Kings wanted to do Bogey and Beef Stew with Detroit for those two. Now, that didn't happen, but I get it, because also Bogey's got a unique shtick in his contract where, like, you could waive him in year two and don't have to pick up the full value of that contract. Again, interesting stuff. So the Sacramento. Let's keep going. Who else are the candidates? I'm going to get to the fun one now. New Orleans. New Orleans has got it. So, the reason New Orleans is going to be a cap crunch team. They had an exciting year. Zion was finally relatively healthy. It looks like they're going to get into the playoffs. They had a chance at the home court. Obviously, everyone in the West is kind of mishmashing between several different roles, several different slots, rather, in the standings. So the guy you look at in New Orleans is CJ McCollum. Why do you look at CJ McCollum? You look at CJ McCollum because he's taken away usage from your youth, and it's a good cap figure. I mean, the numbers help. It's a big number. It's $32 million. He's got 2 years left, 64. It's a lot. So one guy is already almost like two of these guys. And they probably need more of a traditional point guard. They're going to want to, this is the big one, they're going to want to extend Trey Murphy. Trey Murphy's been playing well enough that I think if I'm, you know, Trey Murphy's agent, I'm like, all right, you know, give it to me. I'm your guy. So there's going to be, you know, plenty of concerns. And again, like, I do think Trey Murphy's the guy you obviously want to retain if you're New Orleans. So as a result, they're gonna get rid of McCollum for nothing. And he's a talent. You know, they just got him a year ago, and now they need to unload him. And they got him a year ago for a reason. So, all I would say looks pretty good. With our friend CJ McCollum. Here's the concern. Is he's a negative now. So, what can you add if you're New Orleans? That's worthy, right? Like, Jordan Hawkins is too much. You might be able to snag... You know, they have a ton of future picks. Can you get, like, a Milwaukee first in there? I don't know. So, McCollum, to me, is a key candidate. Now, if you're a clever team, you look at New Orleans, you're like, they have a lot of guys they have to figure this out with. They have also Ingram and Zion. Can I give them, like, a decent asset and steal Murphy from them? Right? My Detroit idea is honestly, and it sounds crazy, Durin and Ivy for Murphy and McCollum. They need a young center. Detroit could draft Alex Sarr, who I like anyway. And then it solves, you know, now you don't have to sign a center if you're New Orleans and you get, like, a nice little young guy. You know, but they have Dyson Daniels there, so I get the concern. But McCollum is a guy. McCollum, as a standalone, is the guy they're going to target, right? Fine. Then you have some other obvious cap absorption candidates that the values are dwindled now because of injury. So Zach LaVine's another one. Another cap absorption candidate. Chicago are as happy making the play-in, I suppose. They're going to want to keep DeRozan. And they obviously have to sign him to a healthy contract, which means they're going to need to unload LaVine. He's got like 4 years. Again, three 120 after this one. Maybe it's not as high. You know, flawed veteran talent, all that. But he's another one. He's another candidate that is going to be cap absorption candidate that the team's going to look at. And there's a few more on this list. You know, Cam Johnson's another one, but I think Brooklyn is not as keen to move him. You know, because they got nothing going. There's no, like, free agent they're going after. You know, if there was, then fine. So of this list, if you're a team like a Detroit, the one that has to make the most sense to you is going to be, you know, are those teams that I noted. Look, I like Herter and Barnes. I think that's interesting. McCollum is interesting. Here's my take on it. They're all better options than Tobias Harris for a team like a Detroit. Okay? I'm not going to be able to, if I can get Harris at 260, fine. 2 years, $60 million, great. I don't see that. And as a result, I think a team like Detroit really has to handle this cap absorption thing. I probably missed a couple of cap absorption candidates. I mean, they're all interesting, quite frankly, right? You know, Wiggins is another one that's been flown. Again, not as interesting, really a negative. But they need talent coming in. Get them out of cap absorption. Get an asset, maybe, and then call it a day. It's all about cap absorption.